This is Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 7, text 21. Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shraddhayarjitam ichchati tasya tasya chalam shraddham tam eva vidatam yaham. I am in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Purport. God has given independence to everyone. Therefore, if a person desires to have material enjoyment and wants very sincerely to have such facilities from the material demigods, the Supreme Lord, as Supersoul in everyone's heart, understands and gives facilities to such persons. As the Supreme Father of all living entities, he does not interfere with their independence, but gives all facilities so that they can fulfill their material desires. Some may ask why the all-powerful God gives facilities to the living entities for enjoying this material world, and so lets them fall into the trap of the illusory energy. The answer is that if the Supreme Lord, as Supersoul, does not give such facilities, then there's no meaning to independence. Therefore, he gives everyone full independence, whatever one likes. But his ultimate instruction we find in the Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and fully surrender to him. That will make man happy. Yam yam, yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta, shrate architum ichchati, tasya tasya chalam shuddham, tam eva viditam yaham. The Lord says that sitting within the heart, I give steady faith to the person who desires to worship some particular demigod. Of course, in the present context, most of us are not accustomed to seeing people worshiping demigods. Here in New York, we don't find that there are streets lined with temples for Lord Shiva, or Durga, Kali, or Ganesh. People are not interested in worshiping demigods. But still, they're interested in material enjoyment. Well, Krishna is not making their faith firm in any demigod, because they're not interested in any demigod. Of course, they have different kinds of demigods. Politicians, rock singers, and so on. And people have faith in them. Scientists, and so on. They're something like demigods for the common people, although they're very tiny little creatures. Anyway, or people don't have faith in any particular leader, but they have faith in material enjoyment. They have faith in material enjoyment. That also is aided by Krishna. If someone wants to have faith in some particular course for material enjoyment, Krishna helps, yes. You don't have faith in me, but you have faith in a college education. You have faith in your government. You're ready, waving, this now flag waving business has become a very big thing, flags everywhere. People are pledging their hearts to their country. So somehow they have faith, yes, my country is great. So, why? they have some inclination that way, and it's Krishna from within the heart who gives them faith in their country, or faith in their society, or faith in some particular leader, or faith in some course of material enjoyment. That's explained elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, that there are different kinds of faith in the according to the three modes of material nature. According to goodness, or passion, or ignorance, every one of us is infected in a different way. Someone's more influenced by goodness. Someone's more influenced by passion. And someone by ignorance. And accordingly, we have different interests, different tastes, different food that we like, different kinds of engagements, different ideas, according to the modes that we've acquired from our contact with the three qualities of material nature. So that's not our business, but because we're trying to enjoy, Krishna's helping us. Go ahead, enjoy. Ishvara sarvabhutanam kṛte sevitami tiṣṭhati brahmayāna sarvabhutāni yantrādi tani māyānam. We're all spirit souls. We're all eternal living beings. We're all parts and parcels of Krishna. But we've, at the present moment, forgotten our relationship with Krishna and forgotten our spiritual identities. And we've identified ourselves with these machines. Yantra, the body is a machine, part of the greater machinery of material nature. And having strapped ourselves to these machines, we're wandering around. Yantra bhutani mamaya. We're being conducted by maya in this way and that way. Maya means illusion. What is that illusion? Srila Prabhupada explains that illusion has two divisions. I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer. We believe that somehow we can control the material energy. And you can give her a place to lie down someplace. We believe that we can control the material energy, and we believe that we can enjoy it. But material nature is constituted in such a way that it's out of our control. And enjoyment is beyond our ability to grasp and hold on to. Ishroham aham bhogi. I'm thinking I can control and enjoy. But the material nature is so powerful. What is the extent of my control? Little control I can pretend to have. But actually I'm helpless. Avasham prapatera vashat. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the living beings are avasha. Avasha means helpless. Prakritera vashat, under the strong power of the material nature. Avasham prakritera vashat. Hare Krishna. Avasham prakritera vashat. No one wants to die. But who's so powerful that he can say, I will not die. No? We're all helpless. We're all helpless. I'll not get old. I'll not get diseased. We're all helpless under the superior power. We're like little, bugs. Or I'll give you an example. I was in New Vrindavan at the time, and we were sitting around in the grass. All of a sudden, this mouse ran past.
And behind the mouse, a cat was running. And the mouse ran this way, and the cat ran that way. The mouse ran the other way, the cat ran the other way. And the mouse was running out of options. And no place to run. So finally, he was practically backed up against something. So he turned around and got up on his hind legs and made a aggressive gesture. And the cat just swallowed it. What power does the mouse have in the face of the superior strength of the cat? So, what is our power against the power of the material nature? We try this way or that way by science, by some other means, to control nature. But finally, the scientist has to die, and every one of us has to suffer the consequences of our attempt to control material nature. We try to do this or that, and it comes back on us. We invent the automobile for convenience, and we get some convenience, but we lose oxygen. We lose fresh air. And so many other difficulties come. Small example. So many things we try to do to control nature. But finally, nature refuses to be controlled. You can do a little something. You're allowed to play and do something. But finally, nature always retains the upper hand. Always retains the upper hand. So, the ability to control is not within us, not with us. And what kind of enjoyment will we get? We get enjoyment mixed with suffering. And enjoyment mixed with suffering means suffering. Enjoyment mixed with suffering means suffering. Probably gives the example, sweet rice mixed with sand. Is it enjoyable? There's milk, there's sugar, there's rice. A little sand, and it's spoiled. So the suffering spoils the enjoyment. We're trying to enjoy the material nature, but the result is the suffering. That's explained by Krishna. Purusha prakriti sto hi bhoktehi prakriti janakama. We're situated in the material nature, and we're trying to enjoy the products of material nature. The products of ignorance or passion or goodness. Those in the mode of goodness are trying to enjoy knowledge and wisdom and cultural refinement. Those in the mode of passion are trying to enjoy acquisition and material sense gratification. And those in ignorance are trying to enjoy liquor and rotten things. In any case, what we're trying to enjoy is produced by the material nature. So what is the result? Karanam guna sambhasya. We become associated with material nature. We're trying to enjoy, and naturally we become associated with, entangled with, that which we're trying to enjoy. And the result is sadasadvirajamashri. We're taking different bodies, sometimes in higher planets, sometimes in lower planets. But we're continuing in the cycle of birth and death. Is that enjoyment? So the so-called enjoyment becomes the source of my suffering. But because we're determined, let me control, let me enjoy, Krishna's allowing us from within. All right, try it. That's called giving independence. Srila Prabhupada explains that it's something like the child. A child wants to put his finger in the fan. So the father says, don't put your finger in the fan, you'll hurt yourself. But the child says, no, I want it. Don't let it, don't let it, don't let it. I says, don't do that. You'll hurt yourself.
All I want to do is that.
Don't do that. And then finally, all right, do it.
Ah.
The child has insisted that he enjoy. Then all I do it can be said. That's called giving independence. So Krishna gives us independence, so-called. Actually, we have no independence. But we're allowed to have the illusion of independence. All right, we're independent.
Prabhupada gives the example, just like a little child. She wants the moon. The child is playing and sees the moon. I want the moon, I want the moon. So how will the child get the moon? But the mother gives the child a mirror and says, here's the moon, here's the moon, now you have the moon. Isn't that nice? Oh, now I have the moon. And the child is happy, now I have the moon. So we think that we have this, we have that, we're making advancement. But it's actually illusion. But because we want that illusion, Krishna as the super soul from within strengthens our conviction. Yes, you're independent. Yes, you can do as you like. That's Krishna's arrangement. So, in the present context, we're just directly trying to grab material enjoyment. But in the Vedic culture, they're more pious. They accept that there's some higher authorities called demigods. And they worship the different demigods for fulfillment of material desires. And Krishna says, from within, I give them the determination. All right, I'll worship such and such demigod. Srila Prabhupada continues, both the living entity and the demigods are subordinate to the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity cannot worship the demigod by his own desire, nor can the demigod bestow any benediction without the supreme will. As it is said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of God. Generally, persons who are distressed in the material world go to the demigods, as they are advised in the Vedic literature. A person wanting some particular thing may worship such and such a demigod. For example, a diseased person is recommended to worship the sun god. A person wanting education may worship the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and a person wanting a beautiful wife may worship the goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. In this way, there are recommendations in the Shastras, Vedic scriptures, for different modes of worship of different demigods. And because a particular living entity wants to enjoy a particular material facility, the Lord inspires him with a strong desire to achieve that benediction from that particular demigod. And so he successfully receives the benediction. The particular mode of the devotional attitude of the living entity toward a particular type of demigod is also arranged by the Supreme Lord. The demigods cannot infuse the living entities with such an affinity, but because he is the Supreme Lord, or the Supersoul, who is present in the hearts of all living entities, Krishna gives impetus to a man to worship certain demigods. The demigods are actually different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they have no independence. In the Vedic literature, it is stated, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Supersoul, is also present within the heart of the demigod. Therefore, he arranges through the demigod to fulfill the desire of the living entity. But both the demigod and the living entity are dependent on the supreme will. They are not independent. everything is dependent on Krishna. Now we don't go begging to the demigods, but we sometimes go to some political leader or some powerful person and we ask for some favor, maybe from some academic official or from some law enforcement officer or from a judge or from a bank officer. Sir, could you do this for me? It would be very kind of you. It would be only right. It would be your kindness. So we're asking help from that particular person. And the person is thinking, yes, I have the power to say yes or no. But actually, he's being dictated to from within by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not quite independent. He's not quite independent. Krishna's in the background. Of course, it becomes very complicated. The person from whom we're asking benedictions is controlled by the material nature. And we're also controlled by the material nature. So none of us is independent. There's like this great machinery going on. Everyone is under the control of material nature. Everyone is thinking that he's independent. And we're all like little puppets on a string. We're all like little dolls on a string with our so-called independence. And on account of misuse of independence, we're suffering. But Krishna says, surrender to me. Use your independence properly. You'll be free from all sufferings and all entanglement in material nature. This is our business. Are there any questions? Yes?
So you're before
Loud.
Louder?
Yeah, it's that kind of room where you have to speak really loud.
So you're giving the example before of so I was just wondering, is that any sort of attachment? If it's not based on motivating some with at least some Krishna consciousness, it's going to ultimately the result is more suffering and pleasure.
Is everything except motive goodness mixed with consciousness, with Krishna consciousness, going to result in suffering?
Anything but motive goodness with some Krishna consciousness, anything of any attachments or that, is it going to be more suffering?
Any attachment except for the motive of goodness with some Krishna consciousness, will that result in suffering? No, you've understated the case. Even the motive goodness mixed with some Krishna consciousness will bring suffering. The mode of ignorance is constant suffering. The mode of passion is comparatively less. And in the mode of goodness, there's supposed to be enlightenment and a sense of happiness. But even that mode of goodness with the sense of happiness is a cause of suffering. One thinks that, yes, I'm a poet, I'm an author, I'm a spiritual seeker, or whatever. And one comes back again in the material world to write, to hear poetry, to sing, to seek. And just a little Krishna consciousness certainly is a great benediction for that person. He starts to be lifted above the mode of goodness and gets some contact with the transcendental world. But his attachment to the enjoyment of the mode of goodness continues to be a source of suffering for him. Because he has an attachment to enjoying in that mode, he doesn't get pure Krishna consciousness. Until he gives up that, or becomes freed from that attachment to goodness, he doesn't stand firmly on the transcendental platform. And therefore he has to continue in the cycle of birth and death, which is suffering. So until one comes to the point of pure Krishna consciousness, anyavilashita shunyam, still he has to suffer.
course, anyone who comes to the mode of goodness, his suffering is less. Anyone who starts to take up Krishna consciousness, his suffering is vastly reduced. But still, I have to stay in this material world as long as I have any attachment into the mode of goodness. Okay. Something else? Yes.
Could you tell me how pure love of Krishna gets changed into sexual desire?
How pure love of Krishna does what?
Gets transformed into sexual desires.
Is transformed into sexual desires? Pure love for Krishna is not transformed into sexual desire. How pure love for Krishna is transformed. It's not transformed into sexual desire, but it's covered. It's covered. It's covered by illusion. Just like my hand. Now my palm is in the light, but if I turn it this way, at once the palm is in darkness. As soon as we turn away from Krishna, at once sexual desire is there, or material desire is there. Yes?
Is Lord Rama a demigod?
Is Lord Rama what?
A demigod.
A demigod? No, Lord Rama. Rama?
No,
Brahma.
Brahma.
Lord Brahma is the chief demigod.
Chief?
Yeah. Among the... Of course, Lord Shiva is also there. Lord Shiva's position is even higher than that of Lord Brahma. But among the demigods of this material world, Lord Brahma is the highest position. But he has to die. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purna Gorti Narajana Sahasri Vaparyantam Yada Purabrahma Vibhu. Lord Brahma lives for a fantastically long period of time. His lifetime was 4,300,000 times 2 times 12 times 30 times 100 solar years. But at the end of that period, Brahma also has to die. So he's not free entirely from the jurisdiction of the material nature. And he's under the... he also admits that he's a servant. The demigod is not such a terrible thing. The demigods are very pious. I'm alone. They're very pious. And they know that we're servants of Krishna. So Brahma is a great devotee. The most pious living being in the entire universe is awarded the post of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma sings in his Samhita, Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Vajam. I render devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda Krishna. So he acknowledges that I'm not independent, I'm the servant of Krishna. Similarly, Lord Shiva carries on his head the water that comes from the Ganges, because that water has been touched by the lotus feet of Lord, lotus foot of Lord Vamadeva, Krishna. So Lord Shiva considers himself purified by the touch of the dust from the lotus feet of Krishna, who is also a servant of Krishna. But Krishna is not a demigod, he's the Supreme Personality. Okay. Some other question? Mm-hmm. Yes?
So, how does one...
That's okay.
How does one break
to... How does one break the attachment which is the source of suffering? By becoming attached to Krishna. And one becomes attached to Krishna by chanting the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. You have to speak loud.
We don't have to discipline ourselves.
We don't have to discipline. Yes, it requires discipline. To try to stop our attachments, yes, it requires some discipline. But simply to try to stop attachments will not be successful. But if we try to become attached to Krishna, then our attempt to become detached from Maya will be successful. It will be successful. Janayati Ashu Vairagyam. Very quickly, if one takes to devotional service, naturally detachment follows. Just like if you have some superior thing, your attachment to the inferior thing just falls to the side. But it requires some discipline. Yes? Therefore, Krishna's telling us, give up this material entangling way of life. Give up these material desires. Give up this. So, unless we can do it, Krishna wouldn't say. So, some work is there on our part. But the essence of the work is to become attached to Krishna. Similar question? Yes?
At one point we're under control of material energy, but Krishna is independent. So, can you explain this to
that? On the one side, we're under the control of material nature. On the other, there's independence. Tiny independence, Srila Prabhupada explains. We have very minute independence. Where our concept of how much independence we have is exaggerated. You know, land of the free. Be whatever you want. You know, but what do people turn out to be? Pretty much what their circumstances let them be. You know, if you're born in a certain family, in a certain country, in a certain part of the world, the chances are you're going to be something according to those circumstances. And you may say, someone may say, you can be whatever you want, but somehow or other, you wind up being pretty much what you would be expected to be. Right? Just you have this idea, I can become anything. Now, some people, according to their karma, they become something more, and they rise above their circumstances. That means there was something in their circumstantial background that allowed them to do that. But this idea of absolute independence is a joke. It's just not true. Just like America, we're told, you determine the future of the country. It's your vote. It's this, that. And it's a shame. It's, you know, how much, what will my vote do? It's, you know, so people with big, big money. You know, my vote and their money? No contest. Yes?
If you worship the demigods,
loud, please.
If you worship the demigods, it's not different than the Supreme Lord of Krishna. Do you also believe Krishna?
I'm sorry. The room is such that you have to speak about three times louder than normal, or I can't hear you.
I was saying, if you worship the demigods,
if you worship the demigods as non-different from Krishna, do you ultimately reach Krishna? No. The demigod is different from Krishna. So if I worship the demigod thinking that the demigod is Krishna, it's a big mistake. I'll reach the demigod, that's where I'll go. Krishna says, Yanti deva vrta devan pitrin yanti pitri vrta bhutani yanti bhutevya yanti vadya janobi. Those who worship the demigods go to the demigods. And those who worship something else go to something else. And those who worship me come to me. He never says, well, if you worship the demigods, you'll come to me. If you worship me, you'll come to me. If you worship the ghosts, you'll come to me. If you worship your forefathers, you'll come to me. If you worship me, you'll come to me. You worship the demigods, you go to where the demigods are. If you worship Surya, you can go to the sun. If you worship Chandra, you can go to the moon, and so on. Now, it can be said that if someone is respecting the demigod, thinking that of the demigod as supreme, it's a little bit of a step forward for him. He's worshipping some higher authority.
He's mistakenly thinking that that higher authority is the supreme authority. Still, he's acknowledging the authority. So, even though he's confused, that will help him gradually make progress. There's a story that there was a man who, living in a village, and he wanted to serve the chief person. You know, he wanted to be engaged in the employment or service of the chief person. So he went and served the mayor. I want to serve the chief person, and you're the chief person, so I want to be in your employ. So, all right, sure. But after serving the mayor for some time, he saw that the mayor sometimes goes and pays tribute to the governor. So then he caught on that the governor is higher than the mayor. So then he went and made the same request to the governor, can I be engaged in your service? And then he's serving the governor, and he thought, all right, now I'm situated, I'm serving the best person in the state. But then he found out that the governor was serving the king. So he went to the king, sir, you're the chief person in the state. I wanted to serve the chief person, so please accept me. The king said, all right, why not? So he was engaged in serving the king. Everything's all right. Then he saw that sometimes the king is going out into the forest, taking some presentations with him. So one time he followed the king into the forest, and he saw that the king is bowing down before some sadhu, some saintly person. And the king is worshipping the sadhu. So then the person thought, well, wait a second, that means the king is not the chief person, the sadhu is the chief person. So he went to the sadhu later, now please, sir, I want to be engaged in your service, you're the supreme person, chief person, please accept me. Well, the sadhu said, I'm not the chief person. The chief person is Krishna. Please engage in the service of Krishna. Well, even though the person was naive, he's thinking the mayor is the chief, the governor is the chief. Somehow or other, because he accepted the principle of serving a higher authority, he was gradually elevated and finally achieved Krishna. So, therefore, the demigod worship is recommended in the Vedic literature. Worship the demigod. That's why our materialistic civilization is lower. We don't care for anybody. We're going to crash through and control everything. But in the Vedic culture, no, you offer respects to the higher authorities. Then people get stuck. They think that that higher authority is the supreme authority. So they make very, very slow progress. But still, some progress is there. Bhavanam janma namante gyanivam apapatitam. And after many, many, many births, they may finally come to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the master of the demigods, deva-deva jagat-pate. And let me serve Krishna. But more intelligent, well, I'm going to come to that conclusion eventually. Why not come to it now and at once surrender to Krishna? Okay. Yes.
You were saying that Lord Brahma is the most pious.
Yes.
So could you explain why the main difference is between being pious and being Krishna conscious?
What's the main difference between being pious and being Krishna conscious? Because we said Lord Brahma is the most pious. No, finally, the greatest piety is to be in Krishna conscious. So Lord Brahma is the most Krishna conscious among the conditioned souls. So he's given the greatest responsibility. He can be in charge of the whole universe. But he's not perfectly Krishna conscious. Yes?
Could you help me clarify the Vaishnava stance of Christ? I read the Prabhupada that he was worshipful, that he was in power and authority.
Yes, Jesus Christ is accepted as Shaktyavesh Avatar of God. Avatar means the form of the Lord who descends from the spiritual world. Krishna says,
Yadayadahi dharma sudhavi bhavati parvati. Tadatma. Sometimes, from in age after age, I appear in this material world. So, it's further explained that sometimes he comes himself as Krishna. Sometimes he comes in a partial manifestation of himself, like Vishnudev or Ramchandra or Varaha or and other avatars. And sometimes he sends a living being, especially empowered. That living being is not God, but he has the power of God. Shakti. Shakti means power. Shakti Anesh. He's invested with power from God. Just like sometimes, all in the old Western films, someone is made of, you know, they need to go chase after the bad guys, so someone is given a badge, and he's deputized, right? So he now has the power of the law. Although he's an ordinary citizen, he's given power. Now you're a law officer. Or even take the law officers, the regular law officers, they represent the law. He's an ordinary person. He's a citizen. He wakes up in the morning and has breakfast and a cup of coffee and kisses his wife goodbye and so on. So he's a citizen like you or me, but he's empowered. So he's the law. Even in the old, you know, the old movies. Uh-oh, here comes the law. What law? It's a guy. But actually, here comes the law personified. He represents the government. The power of the government is standing there in front of you in the form of the police officer. So, the Shaktyadesha avatar is a living being, a very pious living being, or devoted living being, servant of Krishna, who's sent from the spiritual world. Avatar means descendant. So the avatar descends from the spiritual world and is given special power from Krishna. So in that sense, he's none different from Krishna, as the police officer is none different from the government. But he's not the government. He's still the servant of the government. And the Shaktyadesha avatar is not God in person, but he's the empowered representative of God. So he's given the respect of God because he's representing God. Just like the spiritual master is not God, but he's accorded the respect given to God because he's representing God and he's engaged fully in the service of God. Okay. Yes.
Sometimes you read scriptures and how much they say that sacrifice maybe God saves them.
Sometimes it's said that when the sacrifice is offered to the demigods are sustained. Yes, the demigods, it seems, are dependent on the offerings given by the living beings. Their existence is not so happy when they're not offered sacrifice. Even on the heavenly planets. There's relativity. It's not that their happiness is unalloyed or unconditioned. They're supposed to get sacrifice, and if the sacrifices are not there, it's not a happy state. Therefore, Indra was perturbed that Krishna has ruined my sacrifice. All the Vrajvasis were offering it to me, now they're not offering. So he was peeved. Until he came to his senses.
So it does seem that, you know, he is quite insignificant. He was
indeed us. We're insignificant, but still there's a relationship. Just as there's a relationship between the king and the citizens. King, you know, what does he need the citizens for? But still there's a relationship. Shall we stop here? Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada ki jai.